ball is high, it is far, it is gone to win the game.
The Mets are on their way back.
World champions for the 27th time.
Home plate for all things Major League Baseball. This is the Nosebleeds Podcast on WFUV Sports.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Nosebleeds. Today is Friday, August 16th. I am Tucker Austin, joined today by Max Spitza and Barrett Spreitzer. And today we have a great show for you. We're going to be talking postseason picture, Players Weekend, which begins today as of this recording. But before we get into the larger scale discussions, let's start off with the hometown ball clubs, my beloved Yankees, and the other one. That's just a quick jab. Obviously, the other team is the Mets, but we are going to start with the Yankees. And sort of the elephant in the room in a week of a lot of ups and downs is Jazz Chisholm. What an awful, awful injury for the Yankees. It didn't turn out to be as bad as they thought it would be. They thought he might need surgery, but after a couple of other opinions from some other doctors, they say that rehab is possible without surgery. They're eyeing a September return, but losing a guy like Chisholm, who was having a really hot start to his time in pinstripes, has really got to hurt the Yankees.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much sums up kind of the Yankees' deadline moves over the last couple of years, and just the Yankees in general, is that they make a big move, they sign someone, and he immediately gets hurt. And so, I mean, like, you can criticize Cashman's moves, but there's only so much you can do about injuries. And so, yeah, it's just very Yankees to get hurt, what, 2.5 weeks after making a huge move at the deadline?
And honestly, it's also up to Jazz at this point. You know, he's on the best team he has ever been on in the MLB. He's been stuck in Miami, not playing for great teams. So if I was him, I would try and stay off surgery as much as possible, try and get back in there. And I mean, if you get hurt after coming back, then you needed surgery, but like, this is going to be one of his few chances. A great opportunity to maybe get an extension on a contract with the Yankees if he comes back and plays great. So honestly, more is on the line for him, I believe, than the Yankees. However, he was really nice to see. He really brought the energy up and changed the whole tradition-centered Yankees into more of a modern ball club with what he was wearing and the energy he brought.
Yeah, and his hitting certainly speaks for itself, but I mean, the defense was also there too. He gets moved from the outfield where he was playing all year with the Marlins, and he gets moved to third base, and he looked smooth out there to start off. I mean, and the Yankees have had question marks at third base all year because of DJ LeMahieu trying to come back. They've been using Oswaldo Cabrera in there, and he's had a hot bat at times, so it's been nice to have him in the lineup. So the fact that there's been question marks at third base makes it so that the Yankees don't have as much of a problem with this. I do agree with that, Max, because they have DJ LeMahieu or Oswaldo, who they can just slide in for Chisholm. And LeMahieu's bat is like starting to pick up again. It's not quite where the Yankees would like it to be. But he's not a hole in the lineup like he was a month and a half ago. There are more question marks for the Yankees, though, outside of Jazz Chisholm. Moving to the bullpen, Clay Holmes has looked better in the last, like at least in the start, in like halfway through August. But his end of July was a really rough stretch. The Yankees picked up a couple relievers at the deadline in Mark Leiter Jr. and Eniel De Los Santos. One of those players is not on the team anymore. Eniel De Los Santos was DFA'd earlier this week, just 2 weeks after picking him up. And this goes more to the point we were talking about Cashman and the deadline issues, where Brian Cashman's moves at the deadline tend to pan out poorly for the Yankees in the season that they occur. And with Chisholm, this is the case because of the injury. That's out of his control. But Eniel De Los Santos kind of imploding and then getting DFA'd is much more on Cashman. But with Clay Holmes getting better, but not quite there, the Yankees are kind of in a tough spot. So Max, we'll start with you this time. The Yankees are in a terrible position past deadline to try and do something with their bullpen. where can they go if Clay Holmes is not the guy in the ninth inning?
Be the biggest question for them, and honestly, they're at the point in the season where they can't really test out a lot of options. Because I mean, if you have a big enough lead, then it's not a high enough situation for someone to really show that they can actually pitch in a high tense situation. I think I really like their recent pickup, Leiter. He's really shown that he can do it. I've talked to a bunch of my friends who are huge Yankee fans. Personally, I'm not, but they were actually quite surprised when he came in and was doing as well as he has been doing. But I mean, you want to look at Clay Holmes. He still has 25 saves on the season. He's pitched 49 games. He only has a 2.81 ERA. I mean, I think a lot of times Yankee fans are comparing him to his first 20 games, right? Like that first stretch where he was going insane, to where they're like, oh, like this is exactly who he's going to be the entire year. Which, when you get into these hot, sticky games in June and July and August, people are gonna lose a little bit of their abilities. But I think by September he's gonna be back. He's gonna be ready, and he's gonna secure that save role for the Yankees.
Yeah, I think right now, whether or not Clay Holmes is very good, obviously to win in the playoffs, you need a good closer. But I think right now the name of the game for the Yankees is just kind of survive. They're gonna have some reinforcements coming into that bullpen with Scott Efros maybe finally being healthy and able to pitch, and his stuff is nasty. You got Ian Hamilton maybe coming back towards middle end of September. And Lou Trevino will probably be back as well at some point soon-ish. And so if the Yankees can just kind of piece it together in the bullpen for the next couple weeks, they've got some reinforcements coming. And that'll take some of the stress off of guys like Leiter and off of Clay Holmes and allow them to maybe not pitch as much down the stretch so that they're ready for the postseason. But right now, I mean, there's really, unless a complete collapse happens, the Yankees are pretty safe in the postseason, and so I don't think there's a whole lot to worry about with the bullpen right now. It's more about just making sure that the arms are healthy for the postseason.
And I know Tucker and I were talking before the show about the Brewers and Williams, as well as I brought up Josh Hader, and how for the Brewers we used him in that stretch that he was playing for us so often. By the time we got to playoffs, all the National League teams had seen him six, seven times, to where he was irrelevant in the playoffs. Like, he had a good game every once in a while, but I mean, you look when they lost to the Nationals. The Nationals had seen him by that point six, seven times, to where they're not afraid to face him. So I think, just like you're saying, Barrett, if you hold Clay and you let him get completely healthy, completely comfortable, and save him near the end, especially when they're playing the Orioles near the end of the year, who they're definitely going to face in the playoffs, like teams like that, where you definitely want to keep him as far away from comfortability for the rest of the team. So the less they can use him, the better he's going to be in playoffs.
And I love that point because the Yankees' use of their bullpen recently has been kind of alluding to the fact that they might be hitting the brakes with Clay Holmes, trying to keep the AL teams guessing for the playoffs. Particularly because, shout out to Kirk Cousins' cousin, Jake Cousins, who picked up his first career save on Tuesday for the Yankees. But that just told me that, like, hey, the Yankees might be using some different guys in late inning situations, trying to see if there might be somebody else in this bullpen who might be able to get it done in the ninth when it matters, maybe when Clay Holmes can't. Although, again, he has been better recently, so I don't want to talk down on Clay Holmes too much. But to move to the other end of the perspective for Yankees fans, I suppose the peak of the roller coaster rather than the dip would be this MVP race between Judge and Soto. It is a full sprint now. I mean, between Soto hitting like four home runs in five at bats, his first three homer game the other night against the White Sox, then Judge comes in with his 300th career home run the next night, and Aaron Judge's last 15 games, I wanted to pull this stat. He's batting .472, and I know average isn't the same thing that it used to be, but .472 is insane. Six home runs, 14 ribbies, and a 1474 OPS. And he just continues to do this. Like these 15 game stretches occur basically back to back. Aaron Judge is tearing the cover off the baseball. And when they have interviews post game, Judge and Soto literally cannot agree over who is the best hitter in baseball. They both think it's the other one. So the Yankees have like a dream scenario in terms of their two stars at two and three in the order. It's getting to be a really, really close race. I think Judge may run away with it if he keeps up like this, but it's definitely going to be close.
Yeah, and I think when you look at Soto's three homer game, he gets into that fourth AB, takes three balls, right? And I'm thinking all the way out for the cheap seats, which he does on the next pitch, which is about half a foot out. But I mean, might as well go for that fourth home run. But then the sense, I mean, he has so much maturity now, which you maybe saw with Harper when he left Washington and when Soto leaves Washington. Granted, Soto wasn't the same, had the same issues as Harper did in Washington, but he had such a maturity to take that final ball instead of also going for another home run there. So, I mean, while I think Judge is gonna end up having this MVP, I think Soto has proved that he's a Yankee, proved that he can do it, and now it's his time to hit some home runs in the playoffs. And maybe hopefully not against Barrett's Astros if they make the playoffs, but
Doesn't matter. They don't have a chance.
if
When was the last time the Yankees beat the Astros in the postseason? Who
they
cares? Who cares?
no.
Let the two of them hit. They can go 15 for 15 with 15 home runs. If no one else scores, who cares? Yeah, whatever. But on that note, I don't know what's more impressive. The fact that, to channel some of my inner Joe Buck here, that Juan Soto's only 25, or the fact that 500 home runs looks like it might actually be in play for Aaron Judge. Like 500 home runs is very much not out of the question for a guy who's only 32 and came up at 25. Like how it's just insane that the pace he's been on, and over the last what 4 years, he's just consistently a threat to hit 50 home runs, and it's just completely insane how good he is, especially when. Like when you consider most guys, when they are power hitters like that, like Stanton, for example, aren't guys that are going to get on base, for at a like 415 clip or whatever he's at. And so the fact that he gets on base as much as he does with the home runs that he has is just completely insane. And I think that while Soto is very impressive, the sheer like I want to say awe-inspiring just hitting ability of Aaron Judge. I think it's going to kind of take cause him to run away with that MVP again.
So great things happening on the hitting side for the Yankees. Maybe not so much on the pitching side, but they do sit in the top wild card spot. They're a half game back of the Orioles, and that the Orioles and the Yankees pretty much keep flip-flopping every other day for lead of the American League East or top of the wild card in the American League because they have the two best records more in the league more or less. Or they will be the two best teams in the American League when it comes down to it. But hopping on that seven train, we're going to head on over to Queens before we get into the grand scale MLB discussion. Let's talk about those Mets and the Grimace era finally running out of steam. I'm so happy it's over. It was so unserious for so long. But the Grimace energy is finally running short for the Mets. They dropped a series to the Angels and the Rockies. They also were swept on the road at the Mariners by that excellent pitching staff they have out there. And then they drop a series to the A's. So recent form has not been great for the Mets. JD Martinez also got a bruised elbow on a hit by pitch on Tuesday. So you lose that veteran presence in your lineup for a little while. The only thing keeping the Mets in the conversation now is the fact that the Braves had a nasty skid at the start of this month, and the Mets still only sit two games out of the last wild card spot. But if you're the Mets going into this home stretch, Barrett, we'll start with you this time. What's your plan going into September? How do you attack the rest of the season to try and move yourself into the postseason?
I was on here a couple weeks ago saying, we were talking about how the Mets schedule for the next couple of weeks looked like it was going to set them up perfectly to really secure a wild card spot pretty easily. And then we were making fun of the Angels, saying there's no way the Angels, you might as well not even show up to the ballpark. It's not going to be close. And then the Mets go and do what they did, and now it's looking a little bleak right now. Just kind of everything's down in the dumps over there in Queens. But I think if you're the Mets, what you have to do is you just gotta refocus and say, hey, we're still in it. We're two games back, as you mentioned, and you just gotta refocus and say you gotta find some of that magic, however it has to be. Lindor, Pete Alonso, they gotta sit guys that sit, sit the team down in the clubhouse and say, hey, we gotta figure something out because these last couple of weeks isn't who we are as a team. And so you need those leaders to step up because the only way. This isn't a supremely talented team. They have supremely talented players on the roster, but the roster overall is not, they're not world beaters. And so, vibes are huge for this team, and they're a vibes team. And so that the leaders on that team got to step up, and Nimmo's got to get in there, and he's got to be like, we're gonna go to use Dan Campbell of the head coach of the Lions, his analogy, we're gonna go bite some kneecaps, and we're gonna be a feisty team. And we're just going to out-grit you, out-hustle you, and just we're going to win games somehow. And that has to be their mindset.
Yeah, and I think their mindset so far throughout the year was, let's make a lot of money off Grimace and oh my God. And it's kind of been like, I think now if anything, they have to focus. Like they play the Marlins, which they should win that, but they just lost a series to the Athletics. And then they go on this stretch, three home games and then a group of they have a nice little road trip after that, but they play Baltimore at home. Just gonna be huge if they want to make this wild card, just based on the momentum that winning that series would bring. Because right after that, they go on the road. Next day, they're playing the Padres in a four-game series. Then the D-backs, the red hot D-backs, which you look at that very beginning of the year, you would not see them in the spot they are. Then they get a little break. They get to play the White Sox, which is always everyone's favorite thing to do. And then it's back to New York to play Boston. So, I mean, I think if they focus, that all they need is a couple of weeks of focus. That's all they need. And they've won one out of the last four series that they've played in. They need to win some series here, and they need to win it because they play the Braves at the end, but they also play the Phillies and they also play the Brewers at the very end of the season. They can't wait till the end of the season. We see how that goes every year. They got to do it now, and it's got to be in these next couple of weeks.
I love that you brought up the Mets schedule because I was also going to do that at the end. I have a little bit from the Mets schedule and a little bit from the Braves schedule. Those games against the Padres and the Diamondbacks on the road are huge for the Mets because they have a chance to go on the road and pick up games on the two teams that sit at the top of the wild card. The Diamondbacks and the Padres are both 4.5 games ahead in the wild card standings from the Braves, who are in the last spot. And then obviously you have the Atlanta Braves, who are just in that last wild card spot. The Mets are 2 games behind them. But before September 1st, the Braves will play the Phillies 7 times. And that's including September 1st. And the Phillies are, they have been very nice. They're very, very, very good all year. They have not shown signs of slowing down. The Braves did. It was going to be like a dogfight between the Braves and the Phillies, but since all those injuries and the skid, the Braves kind of fell away. The Phillies are running away with the East, and the Phillies really have a chance to knock the Braves out of the playoffs, but this could be the Mets' opportunity in the Braves' downfall. They do have to lock in, though, and I agree with your point, Barrett, like who like just hard focus, refocus, go into these next 2 weeks running into September. Try to put yourself in a playoff spot before September, and that obviously you'd hate to be chasing a spot when it's all when the calendar already turns from 8 to 9. So the Mets really need to take advantage of the opportunity ahead of them. They need to get their vibes back. Like you said, Bear, they are a vibes team. They've been vibey all year, and they are vibey usually. But the rest of this National League wildcard situation could kind of throw a wrench in the Mets' plans. The Giants sit only a game and a half back of the Mets, 3.5 out of the wild card total. And they've just got out of a really hard fought series with the Braves. I don't know if you guys were paying attention to that series out west. They played pretty late every night, but the first two games both went to 10 innings. And then Michael Harris, the second, came back for the Braves, and he went yard in his first game. Logan Webb has looked great, and Snellzilla is back. Oh, my good. Blake Snell's last five games have been a complete return to form. I think I saw an ERA like 0.6, maybe. Like, super hot streak for Snellzilla. Trying to get these Giants back into the mix. The Reds and the Cardinals sit below the Giants, a half game back of them. They're tied at four games out total. And Max, we were talking about your National League Central a little bit before the show. So really, like, what are your thoughts on these, on this National League wild card? Who can make it? Who can't?
I mean, the Giants, I don't think they're making it. I mean, it's funny that you see, like, you see they're 3.5 games out of the wild card, but they're 10 games out of first in the NL West, while the D-backs and the Padres are only, I think, two games out right now. And the D-backs came right after the All-Star break and went 20-5, I believe. So that's pretty huge for a team that was, in the very beginning of the year, really, like, everyone was skeptical about them because they went to the World Series, they come back, and they weren't playing like they're in the World Series. Same thing as the Rangers, right? But I think the NL is definitely an exciting league to watch this year. The Brewers have every chance to go ahead of the Dodgers, send them to that third seed. I mean, the Phillies are where they're at. I think it's going to come up to the Phillies and the Dodgers. But the fact that the Brewers are right there, two games behind, I know that's a little biased, but only two games behind the Phillies and the Dodgers with a predominantly young team with the Brewers, I mean, that's huge for them. That's unbelievable. But when you look at the major aspect of this, which is the NL wild card, I mean, 64 wins right now. Like, that's pretty impressive for a wild card. And I think looking at this year altogether, like, some people are saying that everyone sucks this year. I mean, that's one way to look at it. I think a better way to look at it is that everyone's finally getting to that point where everyone's on a level playing field, right? Like, a lot of people's prospects are finally coming up. Teams like the Padres and the D-backs, they're finally actually making a say and saying that, yeah, the NL West isn't just about the Dodgers. The Central is the Central, and that's shown it this year. They're terrible. But, I mean, Brewers are playing great. That's all I care about. So I think it's definitely a much different look than the AL wild card, just because you kind of already know who's going to be in that. You have an idea, like, Yankees or Orioles are taking a spot in there. But I don't know. I think the NL is going to be exciting. Postseason is going to be exciting. I think it always is in the NL. But yeah, I mean, as long as the D-backs make it, for you Met fans, as long as the Mets make it, as long as the Astros don't, then we're going to be good. We're going to be happy.
Buddy, the Astros have the biggest lead they've had all year. The Astros are the hottest.
The Astros are actually doing fantastic right
eight
now.
Wins.
Yeah, Yordan Alvarez is breaking right. scoreboards.
Shea Whitcomb is up. Okay. Back
by the
to
way,
back
they should
years
charge
beating
him
the
for
minors
that.
In home runs. Shea Whitcomb is up. All right. Everybody relax. The Astros are going to be fine. The Astros will be fine. The Mariners don't know. They sold out at the deadline. They got all these guys at the deadline, and they can't win a game. They can't win a game. I don't want to hear it about the Astros. We are back. Anyways, the NL. NL wild card. NL wild card. You know, I think the way it is right now is kind of the way it's going to stand. I don't see the Mets turning it around, to be honest. I think, you know, they might hang around there and it stays at, you know, that 2-4 games. But I think that's probably where it'll end up. Outside, like, I just don't see any other teams. Like, I don't see the Giants really doing a whole lot. If Snell keeps pitching the way he does, Logan Webb is a stud. Maybe, but I don't think they have necessarily the talent to, you know, go on a going to run and make a battle, you know, deep into August and September. And, you know, everyone else in there, they're, you know, it's close to that last wild card spot is close, but at the end of the day, it's a bunch of teams that are like sub 500 to fighting the battle around 500, and I just don't see them as postseason teams. So the teams in it right now, I think, are the teams that are going to end up. The only team outside is the Mets that I can see making it, but man, I just don't know. Outside of the month and a half, the Mets have just been pretty pathetic all year, and so I just don't know if it looks close, but I think it's maybe not as close as it looks on the surface.
Well, the postseason push is certainly upon us. I think it really starts around the middle of August. Most people would say it starts like on September 1st, but I think like mid-August is really when people start to take a look at the standings and are like, okay, we're down to the stretch here. What do we have to do in the next 2 or 3 weeks to really put ourselves in a position? But the MLB, on the other hand, is taking a much less grave approach to this weekend. Most teams will be concerned with how they're going to attack the next couple of weeks, but it's players' weekend. It's a fun little chance for the players to kind of express themselves a little bit. They've been doing it for a few years now. It's been done well. It's been done on the poorer side. The uniforms have been good. They've been bad some years. It's kind of a toss-up every year, but I think they have a good plan this year. This is from an MLB Network graphic that just describes each day. So Friday, today, the focus is going to be fun aspects of players' personalities, friendships, and off-field interests will be featured. So I think that's a pretty cool thing. I've already seen some content from that, like guys just talking about their routines, what they like to do in their off time. It's fun stuff. You get a window into the players' lives. Saturday is going to be causes, focus on charitable and community initiatives that are important to players. That's another cool one because players get to choose their organizations that they want to focus on or they want to donate to. So that's another cool thing for the players to get involved this weekend. And then Sunday is going to be appreciation, where players celebrate the people who helped them on their path to the major leagues. This is the coolest one, in my opinion. Because it's always great when players get a chance to really like show their appreciation for everyone and like for everyone to see the kind of support groups that these professional athletes have to get to the place that they are, because no one really does it alone. But I think the whole idea of Players Weekend this year and the way they're doing it is a really cool idea. I just wanted to hear your guys' thoughts on it before we wrap up.
Yeah, I think it's cool. I would love if they brought the jerseys back. Not the black and white jerseys, those were stupid, but the bright colorful jerseys with the names on them, and I think that was like really cool and it showed some personality in baseball. I like the themes that they have this year. So if they could combine that and bring the jerseys back, I loved those jerseys. They were so awesome. But I do like the idea. I always love when leagues try and emphasize, you know, the players' charities, because it's really cool to see how these players come in, you know, whether they're on a 1 year contract or, you know, they've got the long term deal. When they come into these communities that, you know, they, but like the guys from, you know, guys from Cuba are coming in and living in like Chicago. And like, it's cool to see how they interact with the local community and kind of just integrate, whether they're there for a year or not. Like, it's one of the cooler things. And so, really putting that out on a platform and, you know, making it known to everyone, it's one of my favorite things that any league does.
Yeah, I agree. I do have to say one thing, and you know, if this ever comes up in a job interview with Nike, you know, I'm okay with that. But Nike, you gotta stop, dude. You gotta stop being greedy. All right, you're trying to take away the Phillies' awesome uniforms already. And you're trying to be greedy and not give us some cool jerseys that I would definitely spend $200 on.
I like the hats, though. I'll say I like the hats with the
I
little
like
logo
that.
patches on them.
New Era was like,
Yeah.
hey, Nike, if you're not gonna help, we're gonna help. All right, we're gonna
Yeah,
make some cool
I'm
hats.
watching the
Shout out
Cubs
New
games right
Era.
now, and the hats are cool.
Yeah, I think the hats
Nice.
are unbelievable, but it's also like I wish they brought back the cool jerseys. I agree, the black and white ones were weird. It was kind of
Yeah.
like you can't
And
even see
especially
their
with the
no you
pitchers
can't even
too,
see
because
their
the pitchers
nickname.
wearing white had to wear the black hats because they couldn't wear white hats, like bright white
Yeah,
hats. It
so
was
it was like
distracting.
it was just like that was dumb. I don't know why they did that, but the original ones were awesome. because you see the nicknames. I mean, I know Bryce Harper is going to come out with some crazy stuff. He already has crazy cleats all the time, but
I
he's one
love
of my
bread
favorite
box
players too.
burgers. That was classic.
Oh yeah,
Just
I mean,
box
that's a pretty
burger.
cool one. And they had the Little League World Series one, which is cool. I mean, I know the Phillies last year got to watch a team from Pennsylvania, so that was probably so cool for those kids getting cheered on by them. But yeah, that was my thing. You know, Nike, figure it out.
All right. Awesome stuff. We went over a lot of stuff today for Yankees, Mets, whole major league. But that's all the time we have for today. It's been an awesome show, guys. For Max Spitza and Barrett Spreitzer, I am Tucker Austin, and we will see you next time. Nosebleeds is a production of WFUV Sports.